Thanks for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
I am Angelo Ponzi, your host here at the Business Growth Cafe, and thank you for joining us. Today at the cafe, I'm excited to have Ben Bobo, CEO and founder of Serenitex, to discuss the headaches of growing a business in the business of headaches. Ben is also a fellow podcaster with the show Beyond, which is a streaming video show here in Orange County, and interviews thought leaders in different generations and all sorts of interesting folks. I'm hoping to pitch you to get on your show because I think I'm an interesting guy, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. So Ben, welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate the invitation.
Yeah. So to get things started in context for the audience, why don't you tell a little bit about yourself and about your company?
Yeah, thanks. So my background, I started as a young pup in the Air Force. That was probably an interesting story. Learned to fly out of Orange County, John Wayne Airport. Flew for a little bit in the Air Force and then got into medical devices. Started with Edwards Life Sciences, mm-hmm. Where they went through sales and marketing, upper management. Been involved in about six startups at this point, including Serenitex. And so I've had a long, I don't know if it's an enviable career, but a long career nonetheless in medical devices.
All right. I think somewhere in here I called you a serial entrepreneur. So
yes.
We'll talk about that. But before we get started, I'd like to ask a couple questions. So the first one is, when you think about growing Serenitex, what keeps you up at night?
Well, geez, Serenitex is an early stage startup. So this isn't like you're going to a company, you're applying for a job as a VP or whatever, and there's plenty of revenues and resources to hire you on and to pay your salary and to move forward. In a startup, you're starting something up with a concept. You have to go raise capital. You have to find investors in an early stage that's willing to take that risk and make that bet. Because in a medical device company, you're heavily influenced by the FDA, Food and Drug Administration. Mm-hmm. You have to get clearance from them to market your devices. And in the case of Serenitex, that means you have to go through clinical studies and a process to get to that approval. Well, to get to that point, you need to have the actual concept or the product itself developed, tested, vetted, and demonstrate that it actually works. So there's a number of steps in the process. So the idea of trying to find an early stage investor right now, that keeps you up at night, because there's other investors that have come into Serenitex, and what we call those are investors that invested in a convertible note. And now the objective that I have is to find a seed round investor that'll put the capital in for the development phase. And again, that's very, very risky stage of the company, because what we don't know is what we don't know. Mm-hmm. And we believe, based on a proof of concept study, it'll work and that it does what it says it'll do. But until you actually have done that in a what we call a minimum viable product or MVP, you just don't know. So it's the hard part is finding the investor at this early stage that'll take that risk with you.
So the product is not built yet. It's all conceptual at this point.
Yeah, so what we did is we did a proof of concept. We did what they call an SLA model. We developed it to a point where we could actually test it in a recording studio and then eventually in a doctor's office, and we definitely proved that we can do what we say it'll do. Mm-hmm. But that's quite different than having an actual device that looks more like the commercial version that can do that in any office across the country.
Okay. So I've been involved in a lot of startups over the years, new product development and things like that. And typically, if someone's looking to do proof of concept, about a year or so ago, I worked with a concussion management company mm-hmm. that had this great idea, but they didn't know if it was going to work. So we went out and we did research with neurosurgeons. Mm-hmm. And the same thing in the telemedicine world. Great concept. They were trying to raise some money. The problem is they had about 25 features they wanted to build into the software. At the end of the day, they needed five in order to make it a viable product. So did you guys go out into the marketplace and do market research to help validate this?
Yeah. So when I started the company, the first thing I did, and having gone through six of these, and I think this is a big miss for a lot of medical device companies when they start out, what happens is you get engineers that are smarticus. They're very bright. They're very brilliant. They may connect with some doctors, but in their mind, they have the solution and they're brilliant enough to figure it out kind of on their own. What I did was a little differently. I identified a neurosurgeon, a neurologist, an ER doc, an actual CEO of a local hospital on the provider side as we had this concept to vet it, to pressure test it as we were going through the process. We have, in fact, worked with Frost and Sullivan to get third-party validation on the approach, and we're kind of going through that process now. And I'd say to anybody doing a startup, especially from an investor perspective, if you can invest in that third-party research so it validates your thesis, your premise, right? I don't have a product right now,
right,
but at least I can go out there saying, if it did the following things, does that create value, and would you pay for it? What's the value proposition, and would you pay for that? That is probably the biggest investment you could make early stage as you try to attract and draw other investors in.
Okay.
Into the product.
I'm going to do a little hallelujah for those market researchers out there that are listening. That is the biggest hurdle, and as a marketer and with a market research background, it is mind-numbing to me how many people skip that stage. And, you know, the old, I call it the field of dreams, right? We're going to build it and they will come and buy it. And they don't even know if the product is valid or not. And so to invest the time and the money to really understand whether you have a product that somebody will buy before you spend all the time building it and raising money is so essential. I mean, I've been fortunate to have had some great clients that invested in that. And I've been pulling my hair out with others that don't want to spend a nickel because, you know, they talk about amongst themselves in the boardroom. There's a great story. I don't know if you know this, the Vizio story on the 3D TV. Long story short, they decided to roll out the 3D TV. Mm-hmm. They built it. And it took off like crazy, and then within several years, it died. And it died because of one flaw, is consumers didn't want to wear the glasses all the time.
Right.
And they never bothered to test it or research it.
Or ask the question.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy to me.
Yeah.
So another question I like to ask is, what is the best business advice you've ever received and or given?
I think the best business advice received really sort of in this current phase, which is you never say no to money, right? And it's kind of an interesting concept. When you think about raising money in a startup, you say, do you want to be a little bit picky? Do you want to be thoughtful about who you're bringing as an investor? But at least in this age and time right now, you never say no to money, because when you're trying to get lift off in a startup, early stage startup, anything and everything helps. Now, there could be an argument made that says, well, what kind of investor are you bringing in? Are they vultures? Are they supporters? Are they going to be advocates in the process and in the journey you're on? And in my experience, I'd say don't say no to money. That was one piece of advice I was given by another CEO, and I would tend to agree with that, because, you know, sometimes you know, you can't be too picky at this stage. Now, when I take a lot of the risk out, we have an MVP, we have regulatory approval, a lot of people will come to the dance at that point because the risk has been taken out.
Sure.
And they have a higher chance of succeeding with a product that could ultimately sell to a strategic. So I think that's the biggest piece of advice. I think the biggest piece of advice I probably have offered somebody is slow down. You know, a lot of times when you're a CEO, you feel like you're under a microscope and you got to just do everything on a rat wheel at a high pace. And sometimes that's where you miss a lot of the obvious things like market research, or some of the obvious signals you should be looking at from market feedback, or where the technology is at, or what is or what isn't working. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you just got to slow down, slow the process down, and look at all the elements that, you know, comprise a CEO role, and think about things very methodically and thoughtfully. Right? Because sometimes you think, well, I'm getting a lot done, I'm accomplishing a lot, but it may be the wrong things, or what you think you're getting a win on, you really aren't, because you really aren't asking the right questions. So that's the advice I've been giving, and that's the advice I'd give.
And it's great advice. And so for you listeners out there, take that to heart. Everybody's in a hurry to roll out their products and get them to market. And so a lot of times you're just not prepared for the twists and turns. I talk a lot about the road to growth, and it's not a straight road. There's a lot of ups and downs, twists, turns, broken bridges, whatever it happens to be. And you really have to do a lot of planning, work that plan and revise that plan, and constantly stay focused.
Yeah.
My last question, not my last question of the day, but the last question I'm going to ask about these kind of topics is, if you're a serial entrepreneur, I've got Innerspace, Neurosystems, Neurotemp. Now you got Serenitex. You mentioned you had several others. So, serial entrepreneur. If your life was a book, what would the title of that book be?
Insanity. Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I mean, sometimes when you're in a big company, a big corporation, it's safe, it's secure, it's certain. You got your 401k, you got revenue, you're profitable, you're a publicly traded company. But in that, it can be soul depleting. It can be soul crushing. Yes, you have everything you'd want. You have your house. Maybe it's paid for. And so I think sometimes there's a romantic notion of an entrepreneurial, experience or a startup. What I'd say to people is I wouldn't discourage people trying to take that leap, but just know what you're getting into. And as a serial entrepreneur, there's tremendous risk. And I flew at one point in the Air Force, and unfortunately, the double-edged side of my personality is I love taking risk, and the other side is I love taking risk, and that's not always a good thing. And so I would say if you're thinking about going that way, just do your homework and understand that there's tremendous uncertainty. And depending on the stage of the company, like earliest stage when you're founding a company, you got to raise the capital. But even that doesn't suggest success. I could raise $2 million, I could raise $10 million. And each time you raise the money, you have to demonstrate, you have to execute. There's a plan that's been put in place for the new investors that they expect you to hit. And there's a lot of things that can take you out. Any number of things that are out of your control. So the idea of a startup is, you think about Facebook, you think about Apple. Hey, we started out of the garage, or Hewlett Packard. Those are great stories, that have a lot of fanfare and that people look at saying, that could be me because I could be the next Bill Gates or Steve Jobs. But there's a lot of smart people that are equally or more smart than a Steve Jobs or Bill Gates where the luck didn't fall their way, where things just didn't happen, right? For any number of reasons. So I'd say, the title is maybe appropriate. I just shared, but it's apropos because there's a lot of risk and you got to be content with that. Now, what I find is for me, it's soul filling. Like, right, I could be at a big company and have that certainty, but in the back of my mind, it would just claw at me. Like, I could be doing this, and my personality is more risk taking. And what I also like about a startup is you don't get pigeonholed or siloed into a role. You really have to put on a lot of hats. Yep. And what that does is allows you to always expand your thinking and expand your knowledge. And that's always been important to me. So I think the person has to really understand what their makeup is, what their level of tolerance to risk is, and be really clear on that. Whether you're raising money as a CEO or you're joining that team, because in between all that, there's risk. And depending on your age, that risk could be okay if you're 30, but if you're 50, 60, you got to look at that.
Yeah. No, that's great advice. That I talk to people all the time that they say, well, I think I'm just going to hang it up and go put my shingle out there and, become a consultant. And that's part of my counsel is you need to step back and really think about this. Are you to a stage in your life that you want to risk everything? Because that's really what it is. I mean, I remember the first time as an entrepreneur and that paycheck didn't come in on that Friday. That was a tough feeling, especially, as a young kid, I didn't, have a lot of money in the bank. My first entrepreneurial venture when I was 23, and it was great and failed all within 8 months because I didn't know what I was doing. A great lesson. But the next time around, it was a very different story because I'd already had that experience and understood what to expect.
Yeah.
And a lot of that self-motivation and confidence and the way I was raised.
Yeah.
So you've got a new company. What was the driver? What motivated you to really deal with? And the stats where I found fascinating is it 40 million? Is that the number, right?
Yeah.
40 million people are affected by migraines monthly in the United States and 1 billion worldwide. I mean, that's a niche. Yeah. A lot of people, but that's certainly a niche. But that's like finding a needle in a haystack in the sense if somebody said, let's start a business, I wouldn't go, hey, let's do migraines. So what was the spark for that? What brought that on?
Yeah, well, my whole drive into medical devices was always about how can we bring technologies to market that really help people? That is a motivator for me. How do you make people's quality of life better? And as you start to analyze what's going on with migraines, the idea that anybody in the audience, if you have high blood pressure, that you would accept a doctor's gestalt analysis or workup that you have it based on their opinion. Right, you're going to take blood pressure medicine for something you don't know you exactly have that could affect your liver. The idea that anybody today would do that without a blood pressure cuff is laughable. People would say, wait a minute, show me the data, show me the objective analysis, and then I'll make a determination if I want to have blood pressure medicine. Well, today with migraines, since you can't drill holes in the skull and you really can't see what's going on, it's all subjective. So when you go to a neurologist or primary care physician, those people, the physicians, have to believe what you're telling them. all basis of pain is based on someone telling you I'm in pain. And every prescribed opioid is based on a doctor believing you're in pain. Because other than that, it's subjective. Mm-hmm. So the idea that 40 million people are suffering with a pathology called migraines, and they're being diagnosed subjectively, and then they're being given drugs that are very toxic. You have to stop and say, wait a minute, why is that okay? Why is that the gold standard today? And so I was able to come across a technology that where we can detect migraines to start. We could mm-hmm. also look at strokes non-invasively. And so that was the motivation, because once you see the unmet need and the big gap medically that needs to be filled, and the size of the market is ginormous, and you know that these people aren't being treated optimally in terms of care, right? Because they're being given medicine and there's increased depression, anxiety, and use of pain medicine. And we know from the World Health Organization that migraines is the second leading disabling disease in the planet, just behind lower back pain. Well, you realize that something has to be done here. So that was really the big drive.
Okay. Did you just stumble on that, or was that something that was in your wheelhouse from your previous job or company?
Yeah, I was consulting for another company, and I saw an approach that was being taken, and I worked with a neurologist and neurosurgeon. As we were thinking about it, we said, you know, we think we could use this approach for detection towards migraines.
Okay. How did you build so you went out and you did research in building the use case as far as looking at investors?
Yeah, well, you start with find the right team. So if you understand what problem you're trying to solve, mm-hmm. in this case, we're using a non-invasive form to detect migraines in the brain. Once you understand the approach you're taking, then you want to fill the team out that can help you solve that puzzle in a proof of concept study. So what you're trying to do is saying, we have a thesis. We believe we can detect migraines with this energy source. So now we got to go test if that's in fact true. To do that, you have to find the engineers, a digital signal processor, an algorithm programmer, and of course the medical contingent to make sure, you know, with the sanity check, that are we hearing what we think we're hearing? So you kind of go through that process to get the proof of concept. And once you have the proof of concept, then you have the wherewithal and the ammunition to go to an investor and say, hey guys, look, here's what we're detecting. Right. And in fact, in our data, we show we could detect a migraine, a tension headache. By the way, there's 3 billion people that suffer from tension headaches a year in the world, and 107 million a month. So we demonstrated we can look at those signals. And then from an investor standpoint, it becomes, again, you're reducing the risk that with this approach, you can, in fact, detect these pathologies.
Okay. What has been kind of the biggest challenge that you've had in this business or other businesses that, you know, the obstacles that you've incurred that our listeners can benefit from?
Yeah, I think in this phase, raising money has been massively challenging, and being patient and the uncertainty that goes with that. And then I think the second biggest challenge is who you hire on the team and who you bring in, because it can radically shake and shape the culture. And with that, it can really change the course and direction. Even as a CEO leadership, you'll get board members that want to bring in their people. Mm-hmm. And that could bring, you know, be like a Trojan horse. You got to be really careful. And there's always a jockey at the top for percent ownership and who controls what. So you have this grand vision as an entrepreneur. You really have to be thoughtful. As I said, you don't say no to money, because it is what it is. You need money to lift the business up, but just be aware and cognizant that who you bring to the table is equally as important as the money you bring in. But I think that the biggest headaches is bringing the money in and then making sure you have the right people at the table to execute the business plan.
Let's talk a little bit about identifying the right people, because that's another whole segment of a show that we've talked about a whole bunch of times. But how do you identify the right people to bring in? I mean, what's that process?
Yeah, number one, I have a no asshole rule, and I have a pretty good detector. There's people that'll come in that have a lot of, I'd call it from a psychological standpoint, a lot of things they haven't settled in their psyche. So you can tell early on, just interaction with them, their style, if you're in a group setting, if they're boisterous, if they're loud, if they'll say things. And I'm talking C-level people. And there's just not a filter. There's just not emotional intelligence. And I think it's about bringing contributors on the team, letting them shine, but they also have to work within the team. And I think sometimes you need the antagonist. I mean, I'm not saying you have this pristine, whitewashed group of people.
Right.
But at the core of it, there's certain Machiavellian personalities. There's certain people that have to stand out. There's certain people that have no sense of other people in the room. And so I'm looking at all that. And I think you got to do a personality test, quite frankly. It's like if you go to a restaurant. I was at Houston's, and I said, what is it? What's your recipe here? Because every time I go to Houston's, they are just rocking it. There's always people there. And they said, when we hire people, we do a personality test, which makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's certain, you know, dress standard and how their hair looks and how they look. And so I think from my vantage point, you got to do a personality test. And you really got to bring complementary pieces in where they're comfortable with pushback and challenge, but they're also comfortable sharing their opinion. Because one of the things I would say to anybody is it's not about what I think about as a CEO. Who cares? It's about the team, the group collective, and their bona fide experience in that discipline, whether it be regulatory or R&D, that they can speak their truth, speak their voice, and share what they're learning real time, so that us as a group, as an executive team, can take that information in to make the best decision. The idea that, you know, people look at what I think, I got the wrong guy in the team.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't mind pushback, but I just don't want the asshole who's just trying to be difficult because there's a lot of those out there.
Well, I think you made a great point is having the ability for someone to feel comfortable in voicing their opinion,
right,
supporting their opinion, but accepting that it's really about the collaborativeness.
Absolutely.
Of the team is really important.
Well said.
Let's it always blows my mind that these things go by so fast. So let's talk a little bit about your video podcast, and it's called Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the concept of that, and how long have you been doing it, and how can people find out about it?
Yeah, thanks. So Beyond sort of, it started in my mind because I'd look at people, I'm in medical devices, so I've been a lot of cadaver labs, and it kind of hit me as I looked at people that people invest so much of their energy in building a career and learning so much and giving so much back to society that for most people, it just goes to grave with them, what they know, right? So the inspiration behind Beyond was a podcast, a video cast, where we could take into the collective that genius, that person's career, and where did they start from? Where did it all start for them? And talk about the progression and what the big thing is they're doing now, and talk about the recipes for success, the pearls of wisdom, the tough lessons learned, advice you would give, and try to bring that out there and pay it forward, that experience, because there's so many brilliant people out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's not about having the pedigree of Harvard or Yale. It's about no matter who you are, you have tremendous value to bring. And so that was the inspiration. So you can learn more about Beyond at beyondbenbobo.com. And I'm doing like 3 or 4 shows a month. And it's really just all walks of life, really interesting stories. We just had a guy that played for the 85 Chicago Bears. And then the most recent person I interviewed is a British director. That's doing some really hard-hitting films on pedophilia. So I really run the gambit, but I'm really bringing to life people, what they're all about, their essence, and giving them the ability to share their story.
Yeah, I've been on the site, and the, I'll call it the eclectic group that you do have been interesting to see. It's you know, I tend to pull from businesses and business leaders, and you've done some of that, but some of their stories have been extremely interesting, and
yeah.
And I like that aspect, and I encourage people to listen to it.
Thank you.
So kind of a parting, if you could give me 1-2 pearls of wisdom and advice for my listeners about growing their business.
Yeah, I would say that whatever's in your heart and soul, whatever moves you, whatever gets you out of bed in the morning, be true to yourself. Don't listen to naysayers. Don't listen to doubters, even if they're in your family. Wherever they may be, because, you know, sometimes the closest people to us don't have our best interests at heart. They have their best interests at heart. And what I would encourage the listeners and viewers is be true to yourself first and foremost. Follow your dreams. It's never too late. You could be 90, you could be 80, you could be 50, but never give up on those dreams and take that risk, right? Fear is false evidence appearing real. It's usually not real. And sometimes you have to take that step out in that branch, that limb. That's where the fruit's at, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you got to take that risk because life is now, and your truest passions will come when you really pursue what's passionate to you and not what's necessarily passionate to other people. So I just say the biggest piece of advice I'd say is pursue what's really passionate to you, what really lights your fire. And anybody that comes in to quench it, be done.
All right. Well,
find
fantastic.
People that, you know, that support it.
Yeah. Thank you. Fantastic. It's been a great show. It's. I wish my show went as long as your show. I think yours is about an hour. So why don't you tell the listeners how they can reach you, your website, and all that good stuff?
Sure. Yeah. You can reach me on my email at ben@beyondbobo.com. Website is beyondbenbobo.com. You can also find me on social media at beyondbenbobo. And so, yeah, connect with me and happy to talk.
All right. Thank you so much. And thank you for joining us at the cafe today. You can find out more about me, read my blogs, view my show videos, or sign up to receive more information at theponzigroup.com, or I encourage you to connect with me on LinkedIn. And if your business is ready for growth and you need a CMO, but you're not quite ready for a full-time person yet, connect with me. I'd love to talk to you about the opportunities of working with a fractional CMO. Lastly, please subscribe to this show. And if you're already a subscriber, please encourage others to do so. I know they'll benefit from this content on a weekly basis. You can go to businessgrowthcafe.com or on any major podcast platform to find the show. Join me next week for lunch at the Business Growth Cafe. And thank you.
Thanks, Angelo. All right. Great. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to today's discussion at the Business Growth Cafe with your host, Angelo Ponzi. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website at www.businessgrowthcafe.com. Read Angelo Ponzi's blogs at www.theponzigroup.com.